Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Katie F., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Thursday, September 28, 2023, and today we're reading from the Big Book, and we're in the chapter, A Vision for You, and we're on page 156, the fourth paragraph, where it says, she replied, yes, we've got a corker. And we'll be reading through that one paragraph, including the asterisk section at the bottom of the page. And today's readers are, and thank you for your service for the 12 steps, Joni Y., 12 traditions, Mary F., and reading the text are Barb W. and Betsy P., and our backup is Katie G. The newcomer greeter is Vanita L., and the host of the second hour is Leah S. The reference numbers for Wednesday, September 27th, 2023, for the 7 a.m. meeting is 20,682. That's 20682. And for the 10 a.m. meeting is 20,683. That's 20683. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery to those who still suffer through the 12 steps of OA. Oh, I'm sorry, I said that wrong. To carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Joni Y. to read the 12 steps.
Good morning, Joni Y., gratefully recovering compulsive overeater from Connecticut. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to all compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for allowing me to do service.
Thank you, Joni. Okay, I will now ask Mary F. to read the 12 traditions.
Good morning. This is Mary F., a recovering compulsive overeater from Virginia. The 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for allowing me to do service, and I pass.
Thank you, Mary. Okay, how our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speakers should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book. We're on page 156, the fourth paragraph that starts, yes, we've got a corker, ending with, we've got him strapped down tight, and then also reading the asterisk part. I will ask Barb W. to begin reading.
Thank you so much. Good morning. Barb W., compulsive overeater, gratefully recovered in Illinois. She replied, yes, we've got a corker. He's just beaten up a couple of nurses. Goes off his head completely when he's drinking. But he's a grand chap when he's sober, though he's been in here 8 times in the last 6 months. Understand he was once a well-known lawyer in town, but just now we've got him strapped down tightly. Asterisk. This refers to Bill's and Dr. Bob's first visit to AA number 3. This resulted in AA's first group at Akron, Ohio, in 1935. Wow, how cool. Identifying in here goes off my head completely when I was trying to fill the void in my soul with food. I didn't actually physically beat up people who were near me, people who cared about me, in this case, nurses for this person. But people in close proximity, emotionally, I was unavailable. I would let people down. I would do time. And then I would be chastised or corrected or maybe told I was gaining weight, and I would take offense easily. And so I'd remove myself and isolate. In this case, this person was hospitalized. I did not have that experience. But I would clobber myself in an effort to dull my pain of loneliness and futility and self-loathing. It's my discontent. Disabling of movement strapped down tight. My overeating strapped me down, but certainly physically, but the pain and discomfort in my soul was so huge. And emotionally, I was immobilized. I couldn't trust myself. All my failed attempts at food monitoring and losing and all of that, making vows to myself, to others. People couldn't count on me. And I'd overcommit to compensate for my low self worth feeling, the feeling of self-worth. I created a vicious circular vortex of self, tightening my own straps. The potential to allow myself to become who my higher power created me to be began with other humans. And here in this story, two people doing step 12, I come to find out. For me, it was stumbling into vision in a way. Page 509 in the back of the big book has a story. The man is recounting his first meeting. The people fulfilled their responsibility, and it is to reach out to other people, other suffering food addicts. They made me welcome. And then this story writer, his story is, maybe this thing is for real. And hearing the voices on vision, that I wanted what they had. I was so uncomfortable in my own skin when I came in. I wasn't even at home in my own body. And here were these people, I could hear in their voices that they were. And hear from this small beginning, I don't know the history and the names. I look forward to hearing those during the shares. But this community of two went to a third person, and it says in the asterisks, this resulted in the first group. It's a we program. Back to the one, two, it's the two and three that gathered that night in 1935. And the square rooting of that mathematically from that small little nucleus and the activity of one to the other bouncing off with one another and helping each other. And here we are, a network, a life-giving network, life-saving network. I'm just grateful to be here. Can't wait to hear the shares. Pass.
Thank you, Barb W., for getting us started on the fourth paragraph on page 156, including the asterisk part. So who would like to share who hasn't shared in the last couple of days?
Priscilla H.
Priscilla.
Joanne B.
Joanne B.
Ian F.
Ian F. Who else would like to share?
Did you get Joanne B?
I did. I have Priscilla H, Joanne B, and Ian F. We can take several more. Helen C. Helen C. Okay, well, let's start with that list. Priscilla H, Joanne B, Ian F, and Helen C. Go ahead, please, Priscilla.
Thank you so much, Priscilla H. Grateful to be physically recovered and in every other way recovering from this disease of compulsive eating. I'm just so excited about this reading. Not the paragraph where the guy beat up the nurses, but the part at the bottom of the page after the asterisk where it tells us that AA really started in the year 1935. I'm 87 years old. Having been born in August of 1936, I was undoubtedly conceived in 1935, and so was AA. Ah, what a miracle. For me in my life, I've thought many, many times over the years, and especially here lately, that if I had been born, say, 100 years earlier or 1,000 years earlier or any other time earlier, I would have died in one or another disease of addiction, compulsion, compulsive behavior. And so this is the miracle of my life, of my own personal life, as well as the life of millions and probably by now billions of other people who have found a new way to live through the 12-step program of recovery. So thanks for letting me share, and with that, I'll pass.
Well, thank you, Priscilla, and thank you for being here. And Joanne B., you're up, followed by Ian F.
Hi, everybody. Joanne Joanne B. from Vermont, recovered compulsive overeater, thanks to this program. I'm so happy to share today. I listen to you guys every morning on my way to work, and there's so much like wisdom, hope, experience that I listen to. And what came to mind to me today was a year ago, almost a year ago, I was really at the end of my rope with this disease, and I couldn't figure it out. I kept saying to myself, why can't I eat like normal? Why can't I eat normally? Why can't I just have one? And it was like staring me in the face for the longest time. But I just couldn't put two and two together, or maybe I just wasn't able to. Then one day, a friend of mine told me she was doing OA, and that was all it took. It was just like that something switched on in my brain, and I reached my hand out, and I got help, and you guys just pulled me right in. And I think that's what this this reading is talking about, you know. They needed to keep pulling people in onto the life raft. And that's how I feel. And I'm so grateful because now I'm pulling other people on to the lifeboat. And that's how it works. Now it just doesn't, it just continues. And that, to be able to do that is such a privilege, to be able to help others. And I know that that's the secret sauce when it comes to abstinence and living a life that's free of obsession with food and with self, really, too. So I'm just so very, very grateful to be on this line with you guys today, and I hope you guys all have a wonderful day. Thank you.
Thank you, Joanne B. Okay, EF, you're up, followed by Helen C.
Hi, I'm Ian F., compulsive overeater, calling out of Kentucky. Great to be here today. This is like that Jekyll and Hyde thing that talks about earlier. And he goes off his head completely when he's drinking, but he's a grand chap when he's sober. And when I read stuff like that in the book and try to compare it to my own life, it's another reminder to me that this isn't just a food problem. It changes my entire personality. It's not that it makes me fat. It's not that it makes me physically unhealthy. It's that I completely lose my sanity when I'm in my alcoholic foods. And it doesn't matter how good of a person I normally am. There's once a well-known lawyer in town, you know. He's this really successful guy. He's a really cool guy. People like him. But then he has this thing, you know. Like, that's how it's always phrased with compulsive overeaters, with alcoholics. Oh, he's really great if he could only do this, you know. And the asterisk of what was mentioned earlier. I'm so lucky to be here today. And a lot of the times when I'm, like this morning when I really did not want to go to a meeting at 7:00 in the morning, I try to remember how many hundreds of years were there foods that to me are addictive and people like me who were addicted to them and I did not have the solution. Who were grand people who were completely destroyed and taken out by this thing. You know, so like meetings like this, phone calls like this, taking the time out of your day, talk to someone, get out of your own head, pull your head out of your ass, right? That is not only an important part of your recovery, it's something to be grateful for, because it's not something that people have had. It's something that hundreds of years of people have been deprived of that we now get to be a part of. That's a really cool thing. So, the gratitude paragraph. That's all I got to share. Love you guys. I'll pass.
Thank you, Ian F. And we'll have Helen C. And then we'll open it up for more shares.
Good morning. I'm Helen C. from Virginia. And I've been really intently listening to these readings these last mornings, especially since we've been on page from page 553, when they talk about Bill in 1935, which I say was a good year, because that was the year I was born. So I'm just so delighted that these people, Bill, Bob, and Bill, paid attention to what they were doing and put it down so that they wrote a book, so that here in 2023, I have a program. Thank God for that, that they paid attention. And I don't know that I would have been so attentive to what went down in order to help others. But they did. And today we have this beautiful program. And I think that within itself is a miracle. And I am just so delighted that, you know, that they were people to look out for others, to find, you know, to realize that they had to help others in order to keep what they had gotten, been so freely given. And that sure tells me what I need to do today. In my recovered days, I'd like to think that I give, I don't know if I give as much as they give, because they really were givers back in that day. And they seem to be so concerned about the next person, and which is a blessing. And I'm ever grateful that I am part. I'm a compulsive overeater. That's the only way I found this program, because I'm a compulsive overeater. And I have this beautiful relationship with my HP. And I can be here with people that, like-minded people that understand what I'm talking about. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak this morning. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Helen. And although we value your experience, we ask you to limit your shares to every third day in order that others might share their experience. So who else would like to share on this fourth paragraph and the asterisk at the bottom on page 156? Yes, we've got a corporate. Linda R.
Melissa C.
Melissa C.
Donna G.
Donna G.
Lynn S.
Lynn S.
Andy T.
Andy T. Take a couple more. Okay, this is who I have: Linda R, Melissa C, Donna G, Lynn S, Andy T. Any more this round? Okay, let's go with Linda R, followed by Melissa C.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your service. This is Linda R, recovered in Port St. Lucie, Florida. Very grateful to the fellowship. I'm listening, and, you know, for me, I am so grateful to these people that discovered this wonderful recovery process. And for me, it's just been such a wonderful life, and I'm living a principled life today, and I'm just so grateful to them. And, you know, for all those that came before us, you know, these people, you know, were dealing, you know, basically with one substance, alcohol, but they had no idea, like, how this thing would just, like, so plummet, you know, into the fourth dimension of so many other 12-step programs using different, you know, different substances, different behaviors, or whatever they're using to get recovered. And I know for me, you know, the biggest thing that happened for me when I came in was putting down my alcoholic foods. So although, you know, I'm not an alcoholic, I am a food addict, and I needed to really define, like, the substance. And for me, you know, took a while for me to really come up with the food plan that I live today that does not have any of my alcoholic foods, specifically for Linda. And then, of course, you know, living this program, I had trouble, you know, I've been reading this big book for many, many years. And, you know, it's like when all of a sudden, like, I get this new awareness, a new awakening, even though I've been in program so many years. And that's what this has been about for me, the spiritual enlargement, the spiritual awakening, and coming to believe in something greater than me. And I'm just, again, the reason I'm sharing this morning is thanking the pioneers of this program who came before me, who have worked these steps diligently and gone out and helped other people. You know, step 12 service, very important component for me in my recovered life. So thank you for allowing me to share.
Thank you, Linda R. Melissa C., you're up, followed by Donna G.
Yeah, hi. Good morning, Katie. Thanks. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I live in New York. And, you know, when I was listening this morning, it just kind of hit me. Like, thank God for this altruistic movement, you know, that was sparked. And, you know, and I'm thinking about Bill, who was so, he had so much intelligence and so much ambition, you know. And I know, like, when we read Bill's story, he had all these dreams and all these, like, aspirations. And I, you know, it always strikes me in his story is how that personality actually, in God's hands, gets to be an incredible asset. When it's for selfish reasons, it brought him to ruin. But here he is, and I'm thinking, you know, these are people that love the lost cause. And thank God for a fellowship that loves lost causes, because that was me. You know, I think I wasn't beating up any nurses. I wasn't doing anything like that, but wildly antisocial. You know, as soon as I was eating or dieting or doing anything to try to manage my food, I became completely antisocial. And I think I was one of those lost causes. And, you know, I know how I would show up at meetings. I was full of myself, full of my drama. Really, it was really difficult to deal with. I didn't follow directions. I always had a way that I was going to tweak it a little bit different, and that's how it showed up for me. And I'm grateful for the people who had that altruistic ambition inside them, who saw that aspect in me, that I too could recover and become part of the fellowship. And I want to remember that when I am interacting with people, you know, whether they're in the hospital or whether they're, you know, showing up at our meetings, seemingly set, you know, with the suffering of this disease. And thanks. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Melissa C. Okay, now we'll have Donna G. followed by Lynn S.
Hi, this is Donna G. Gratefully recovered in Pennsylvania. Thank you for your service. And I wanted to share this morning because I woke up, it's a rare thing that I woke up immediately, had to do a 10-step because of a dream I had that brought up a resentment. It was a dream of my family, and in my family, I have a very large family. They were saying hurtful things about me. And what it brought up for me was memories of some very real situations where, you know, I found out my family, you know, certain family members were talking about me behind my back. And kind of shocked by that it came up and it was so hurtful. As if, you know, I'm so recovered that I never have these resentments anymore. But anyhow, I was writing out my 10 step, and then lo and behold, it's time for the meeting. And, you know, I hear this reading and I think about, you know, who I was and how crazy I was before I put the food down, you know, and I kind of got I got pulled into that word corker, have no idea what it means. So, you know, there's different definitions, but one of them says somebody outstanding. And then, you know, there's another one that's a noun that is somebody who puts a cork, you know, which is kind of ironic, a play on words, right? Put the plug in the jug. But until I do that, I can't be somebody helpful. I don't know about outstanding, but even helpful to my family, you know, and what would God have me be? I arrive at my 10th step at forgiving and loving and kind and, you know, secure in who I am as God's child, and not personalizing, you know, anybody else's visions or, you know, ideas of who I am. But at that time, legitimately owning that, boy, they had a point. Was I outstanding in a different way, you know, angry and miserable and mean and selfish. And so, yeah, I think, you know, just I'm not even sure I'm making sense, but I just wanted to share that while the timeliness of this and everything Melissa had to share, oh, ditto, like, go, Melissa, like, that was so on point, I believe, you know, that I can become useful. And some of these things that, you know, were so unhelpful to me, who are part of who I am, can become useful characteristics when put to good use and when I'm connecting with God. So, yeah, thank you for letting me share, and thank you again for your service.
Okay, thank you so much, Donna G. And now we'll have Lynn S.
Good morning, Vision. Lynn S., compulsive overeater in Toronto, Canada. And this is really speaking to me. Goes off his head completely when he's drinking. And that's how I am when I'm in the food. And, you know, I've experienced 2 relapses now. And what brings me back and what makes me want to recover? And I know that means putting the food down. And usually I don't want to put the food down. I don't want to at all. I'm loving every mouthful. I'm loving every binge. But what happens is I can't stand living in my own head. I can't stand me. I can't stand my thinking and the way I act and how everybody's out to get me. And, you know, I've got having to fight my way through life and all that stuff. I just can't stand my own head. And the disease has me strapped down tightly, trapped in 100 forms of me, fear and delusion and I can't even think of the other ones. It's just so awful. And every day is terrible. And every day I'm eating, I'm strapped down tightly in this prison, self-imposed prison. Not self-imposed, it's the disease. I got to remember that. It's the disease-imposed prison of this terrible life. And it's the thoughts in my head that I can't stand. And that's why I finally concede, I guess, because I can't stand me. I just can't stand it. And then when I get lifted out of that and I start living by the spiritual principles of the program, and doing exactly what it says, Lynn, exactly what it says, not my interpretation of the words that are in black and white in the first 164, I get a sense of freedom and a sense of connection with God. And the voices in my head and the me in my head gets replaced by a God consciousness, a God connection. I'm just so grateful, you know, that this paragraph really spoke to me, and I thought I was so unique and in, oh, what a great revelation. And then, I, the first person who spoke said exactly that, probably much more eloquently than I did, but just shows me that, Lynn, you're not unique. And that's why we're here. It's a WE program. And I am so grateful for all the WEs that are here. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Lynn S. And Andy T., you're up. Oops. Followed by no one because we need to add more shares. Go ahead, please, Andy T.
This is Andy T., recovered in Minnesota. Thank you for your service. A lot of the AA clubhouses, there's a beautiful picture of the guy we're talking about, the attorney. He's not strapped down. He's just sitting in the bed, on the edge of the bed, and Dr. Bob and Bill are sitting in chairs talking to him. And that was the beginning of AA. And I just think it's such a miracle because, you know, we've said it's a WE program, but, you know, Bill and Bob had each other. And they were both going to the Oxford group, which had six steps. And, you know, I don't know for sure, but I think they could have just had each other and kept going to the Oxford group. And there's other parts in the big book where Bill talks about having, trying to help people. And they stayed in his home. And one person actually committed suicide in his home and broken furniture and, you know, he could have just said, man, this is too much of a hassle. I'll just go to the Oxford group, you know, and talk to Bob and stay sober. And thank God they didn't do that, you know, because now there's OA that's saving my life. And there's like 300 different 12-step programs, you know, Debtors Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous. And I won't name all 300, but yeah, it's just a miracle. And how many millions of people are recovering because Bob and Bill passed it on. And it just has bloomed all over the world, you know. And how many people in the future are going to recover because of these 12 steps. So I'm just so grateful that they passed it on so that I could recover. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you so much. So who else would like to share on this page 156, the fourth paragraph? Yes, we've got a corker.
W.H.
Okay, who was the first one?
Chris G. in Tennessee.
Okay, Chris G., Ken W.H.
Sherry M.
Yvonne H.
Sherry M. Yvonne H.
Satya M. in Maryland.
Morning. I'm sorry. Oh, Batia M. Okay. Maura, was that Maura Z?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It's 7:38. I can't do that very quickly. Let's take one more. Okay, I think this is good. Chris G., Ken W.H., Sherry, I didn't get your initial, Yvonne H., Batia M., and Maura Z. Go ahead, please, Chris.
Thank you. Thank you for taking the meeting, and thank you, everybody, that has shared today. I just have a whole lot of reaction to what people have said, and I'm glad to be here this morning. And my name is Chris. I live in Tennessee. For one thing, I'm having a really hard time just sharing on the meeting today. And so sometimes we have to do things that are hard, even, you know, not everything's. The first thing that came to mind was that this disease is more than just a food problem and more than just a food plan and more than just a diet. And so asking for help is, you know, this is what they called up the nurse at the hospital and asked, how can, you know, do you have somebody that we can talk to? So they actually had to ask for help. You know, it didn't come knocking on their door. And then also, Priscilla's share made me think of my grandfather. My grandfather died drunk. He died in 1935 or so. And
and I don't know much about him. I know that he was a drunk, and my grandparents separated, and he got religion, and he was sober for 7 years. And then he went out and drank again, and he was drunk when he died. And that's about all I know. But I still have to have compassion for the active alcoholic, and get out of myself that I didn't know my grandfather. Isn't that terrible? It's the importance of carrying the message, and that we have a message to carry. And with that, I pass. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Chris G. Ken W.H., you're up, followed by Sherry.
Thank you. This is, Ken W.H., recovered compulsive eater from North Carolina. Glad to be here today. I took a look at the Alcoholic Anonymous number 3, that's Bill Dodson, and on page 187 it says, whether you quit 6 days, months, or years, if you go out and take a drink or two, you'll end up in this hospital tied down just like you have been in the past 6 months. You are an alcoholic. And I know for all the years that I've been around recovery programs, I've always heard people say, no one can tell you you're an alcoholic. No one can tell you you're a compulsive overeater. No one can tell you this, that, or anything. Well, back in those days, they shot from the hip, and it was clear that Bill Dodson was an alcoholic. He fit every category there was to be an alcoholic, and Bill called him out. Basically, Bill or Bob called him out and said, you're an alcoholic. You need help. Here are the facts. Face them. Let's go. I spent a lot of years in OA, and no one would tell me that I was a real compulsive overeater. I would talk around it. I had trouble really saying it out loud. But it wasn't until someone confronted me, so to speak, through a conversation I was having, that on an Easter afternoon walking a path and talking about relapse, which frankly I never had because I was never, ever abstinent. And I was able to say out loud, I've never been abstinent. I've never been without that substance in my blood. The substances that give send me off. I've always had them in my blood, even if I could white knuckle for a day. And to say that out loud, and basically I was prompted to say it, if you will, I've never been abstinent from food, was the start of my real abstinent recovery in OA. Sometimes I think maybe we hold back too much, and maybe that if we're working with folk who are in, so to speak, in and out and all that kind of thing, there might come a time that just being perfectly honest and saying, this is what I see. Is that true? And Bill and Bob just went right at it. Basically said, here are the facts. What do you think? There wasn't any need to be thinking. Once I faced the reality that I could not take a first bite without having 44 others. It helps to have people call me out from time to time. If they see a behavior that does not look like recovery, I need to be told that, and I'm grateful when I am, when they do speak out. So thanks for letting me share. Have a great day. Bye.
Thanks, Ken. Okay, Sherry, you're up, followed by Yvonne H.
Hey, thanks, Katie. Hi, this is Sherry M., and I am gratefully recovered in Wyoming. Thanks so much for taking the meeting today and for everyone's shares, and I was just thinking how this specifically relates to me early, doing calls like Bill and Bob did with the third man, and how I did those kind of calls in the hospital and went out to different facilities, sometimes in very sordid places when I was living in Los Angeles and East LA. Like it says, if we have our well-intentioned, God will protect us in these scenarios. And I would leave and sometimes in the hospital, the person would be so despondent, not even listening to the message of recovery. But I'd leave there, and this was early on in back then in my start of the 12-step programs, and my sponsor would always say, "But you're sober, honey. You're sober. That's why you're doing it. You're sober. We don't know when the message is going to get passed on." I think it's least likely, and at least I don't know anything about this, but if you guys do, please call me after the meeting. But I have yet to have any sort of a situation where, you know, OA is set up with the hospital so that when they see an obese person coming in nearly dead, that they would ask, you know, for members of our community to come out and talk to people at the end of their bed. I think that there's a lot of stigma, and I also think there's just a lot of well-meaning doctors and people who don't really get that some people that are in there that are morbidly obese quite, you know, honestly may be a real compulsive overeater, which means that they don't have control. I think a lot of the messages we get in hospitals and from, I know from my doctors that I go to, you know, I have to always say I'm allergic to that substance. Like, don't give me that. If you're doing a procedure, I can't have that. And they look at me like, that's crazy. You know, it doesn't make any sense. Just stop eating that. Just stop eating that. So I think we have a long way to go to get to where Bill and Bob got to, being able to randomly working with doctors and helping people in hospitals. And I'm not sure, it just prompted me to think, you know, should I be going and talking to doctors? What can I do to spread the message as well? And I think there's more of a stigma because talking to people about their weight is a sensitive issue. And so I don't know, I just think there's more for us to do in Overeaters Anonymous. I'm so grateful that this is a WE program and we do it together. And that we can help others in some way by spreading the message. But, you know, this man number three is so, so important because then from there, then it mushroomed, and then there's another and another and another. And it's just one compulsive overeater sharing their experience, strength, and hope with another. So the place where my hospital is, where I get to share my message, is here. And we're so grateful to be part of this big fellowship, this strong, healthy Vision for You meeting where we could talk to five newcomers a day at the minimum, and I could talk to five recovered fellows a day because it's such a strong program. So if you're new, grab on, hold our hands, we'll hold yours, and let's keep doing this together one day at a time. Thank you so much. I pass.
Thank you, Sherry M. Okay, Yvonne H., you're up, followed by Batia M.
Thank you so much, and thank you for your service. I'm Yvonne H., calling from Germany. I'm a grateful recovered overeater. It's my third time in this meeting, and I used to come to this meeting about 10 years ago, and I came every day, every day. I don't know why I left it, but I'm here again, and I love this meeting. I love it's miraculous what I hear. I've been brought through the big book by an OA sponsor, and I'm now bringing somebody through the big book. It's a miraculous experience I'm having with myself, reading that again. And yeah, the book says on page 156, when I was sober, when he was sober, he was a nice guy. But when he drank, that struck me because I'm an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic, 24 years sober. And now I'm in half a year abstinent from binging. And when I used to drink, when I was not sober yet, people told me, my sister, my father, you have a problem with alcohol. And my sister once said, when you don't drink, I love you so much. You're so nice. But when you drink, I cannot do anything. With eating, with overeating, with binging, nobody told me. Nobody told me why, because I could hide that. I could hide my overeating. I love to overeat alone. Friday to Monday. Just close the doors, close the curtains, close everything, TV on, and bring me the binge food. And I tell you honestly, there was a lot of binge food in my shopping cart. Wow. And I ate until I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop, but I ate until I was sick. How insane is that? How insane is that? Only to say afterwards, I'm not going to do it anymore on Monday. What's that? So now by the grace of God, I'm working the 12 steps. And for me to be a recovered binger, I call it binger, recovered binger for me is to do everything not to have a relapse. Well, I'm not really thinking of that all day, but I am mindful. I'm mindful in my 12 steps. I'm mindful in everything, the way I get up, start with the first 3 steps, and then 4, 5, 6, all the steps, there's always something I can do with one of the steps. And this 12 step, bringing this guy through the 12 steps is amazing. It's doing the big
time,
big
please.
Thank you so much. I wrap up. And of course, sharing my food plan with my sponsor every day. Every day since 6 months now. Thank you for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you, Yvonne. Okay, Batya, you're up, followed by Maura Z. And there's 4 minutes left, so if you could each please take 2 minutes, I'd appreciate it.
Hi, this is Batya M. from Maryland, and I'm a very grateful recovering compulsive overeater. I want to also address about how the guy was such a great fellow, and he was so good he kept coming back 8 times. So when I was in the food, I didn't realize what a personality change I had had. I didn't understand that the nature of the disease did not allow me to express the person that my higher power wanted me to be. If I wasn't actively seeking food or eating food, I was thinking about food. I couldn't be the best friend that I purported to be. If you asked me in those days, what's my best quality? Oh, I'm such a great friend. No, I wasn't a good friend, unless it was a friend to all the bags in the snack aisle. And the compulsion has been lifted for me one day at a time for the better part of a year. And I'm just so grateful that I can be the greatest person learn to reveal her one day at a time because of following the steps and with the guidance of fellows in the meetings. And thank you, and I pass.
Thank you, Batya. Okay, Maura Z, you're up for 2 minutes.
Thank you, Katie. I wanted to start my share with an apology for not being there on Wednesday morning. I was supposed to check in as one of the readers, and I neglected to do that because I forgot it was Wednesday. And now back to the book. Goes off his head completely when he's drinking. And before I came into program, I was not just a compulsive overeater. I was a raging, angry person. And there was no peace in my life. There was nothing but food and anger and fear, a great deal of fear. He's a grand chap when he's sober. Well, I don't know what a grand chap of myself I was back in the days when I was between binges. But at least here with this guy, with AA number 3, there's a difference between when he's sober and when he's in the alcohol. There was definitely a difference between me when I was sober or in the food. And I think I'll pass with that. Thanks, Katie.
Okay, thank you. We have no more seconds left, so thank you to everyone who shared. And please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following the closing. And the share ID for today, Thursday, September 28th, 7 a.m. meeting is 20,685. That's 20685. Excuse me. And we will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Betsy P. please read? A vision for you. Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Yes. Thank you for your service. This is Betsy P. from South Carolina. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand him. Admit your faults to God and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the happy road, the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.